The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by Casper. Visit casper.com/brain for $50 off select mattresses. It's a great way to get your sleep on. Terms and conditions apply. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am your host, personal empowerment coach, Paul Coliani. I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about in this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, I'm going to talk about something a little unpleasant, and that is infidelity. Well, the reason I want to talk about this is because I receive a lot of emails regarding cheating spouses, cheating boyfriend or girlfriend, or someone who had to endure the affair of their relationship and either wants to work it out or doesn't and is still hurting, you know, in emotional pain from that time when their partner cheated. So I want to talk about this to maybe clear the air on some stuff and give you some pointers to remember so that you know what to expect before and after. Now, hopefully you never have to deal with this, but you know, a good percentage of relationships do have to deal with this. And what do you do about it? What can you do about it? Is there a resolution to it where you can reconcile and create a better relationship than you ever had, or is it doomed to fail? And my hope is that you can get through this and heal regardless of the relationship status. My goal for you is to get through an affair with your heart intact. That usually doesn't happen. In fact, your heart is the very thing that gets damaged, along with your sense of safety and security and trust and everything else that's wrapped up into a relationship that you expect to be there, yet when there's any type of betrayal like this, that it disintegrates and is sometimes just shot. It's just gone. So I want to address these things in this episode, and I've got a bunch of bullet points that I want to go over. Just in case you have any suspicions that your partner may be cheating on you, or if you've ever considered what it might look like if it happened, not that you spend your day doing that, hopefully not, but it's good to talk about this stuff so that it's out in the open, you understand it, it's a topic of conversation, even with your partner. If you are with someone now and you've never discussed anything about infidelity, it's a good topic of conversation to find out where they are with it, to find out if they've ever had it done to them, if they've done it to someone else, and how they feel about it, and just knowing where they stand and them knowing where you stand on it, so that there's clarity, so that's not like swept under the rug. I'm not saying you have to talk about this stuff if you have a great relationship and you know this is never going to come up, but I think it's a topic of conversation, just like anything is a topic of conversation. And because it's so prevalent, you know, infidelity is so prevalent in the world, in relationships, it has to be discussed, I think. So what you're about to hear is my opinion. It is how I perceive and believe in the world of infidelity. It is something that I've gained experience and maybe some wisdom through talking with many, many clients, hearing from many of the listeners that write to the show, and just understanding infidelity from the perspective of many people who have gone through it. My personal story is I don't know if I've ever been cheated on, and I know that I've never cheated on my partners over the years. However, in my 20s, I felt tempted. So I know the thought process that can certainly start to permeate your brain when you have that temptation. But the idea of any relationship, in my opinion, is that it's okay to have temptation, but it's not okay to act on that temptation when it involves betraying your partner. So temptation's going to happen, and hopefully it's at a minimum. You're not always tempted all the time, but, you know, there are people that we are attracted to in our life, and there are qualities about those people that we're attracted to that maybe our partner doesn't have or doesn't have enough of, or whatever qualifications that make attraction real to you. It's just going to happen. So I think one of the first points I want to make in regards to infidelity is that just because there's an attraction, just because there's a temptation, doesn't mean it leads to infidelity. I just want to make sure that I make it clear that temptation is a part of life. Oh my God, that's a song, right? Temptation is a part of life, and it's going to happen. And so it needs to be, I don't like to say needs to be this way, but I'm going to say it anyway. It needs to be understood that that's just going to happen sometimes. Now, temptation is sort of a strong word. I don't necessarily like the idea like, oh, I'm being tempted. There's something that makes that sound like it's the last step to betrayal. Like there's other things that happen before that, like attraction and an emotional connection or physical proximity or something like that. And then you have temptation. Like I said, temptation is sort of a strong word, but it just has to be known in the relationship that there are going to be attractions that could lead to temptations. The challenge is not stepping into that temptation and then redirecting your focus on what's most important in your life. Because if you make the relationship important, then you start to deviate away from the temptation and put more time and energy and focus on your relationship so that temptation kind of fades away. Some people do that, some people don't. But like I said, I wanted to start off saying that temptation is going to happen. And hopefully your relationship has the strength and the agility to succeed through any type of temptation. Because you know what I mean? You're even at the movies, your partner's going to look up and go, wow, that actor's hot. That doesn't mean it's a temptation, but there's some sort of attraction to either the physical, emotional, or other qualities of the character. So it does what I like to call activate their system. And that's what happens when you have an attraction, your body, your system activates. And you have thoughts, you have feelings, and those things can lead to temptation. And then you could have a perfect storm of thoughts and feelings and opportunity, and suddenly you're with someone that temptation could lead to the next big thing, which could be the bad thing for your relationship, for your life. Because as soon as you step into the door of betrayal, there's no turning back. I mean, once that happens, you're now in a different territory. Now there's no way back. Once you take the first step into it, it's very hard to come back from that. If you want to save the relationship, if you want to save face, if you want to save your integrity, this is why it's good to talk about this. It's good to be aware of it. If you're aware of your own temptations now and you're having thoughts about betraying, this episode will be very helpful for those who have these temptations and also for those who are on the other side, the partner of the person having the temptations, so that there's an understanding of it before the betrayal and if the betrayal happens afterward. So when we come back, I'm going to go through the basics of cheating and what may make or break a relationship. Again, these are going to be my opinions and hopefully a formula to help you get through the betrayal, if it happens, in the healthiest way possible. Be right back. All right, welcome back. Let's open the door on infidelity, at least get it out in the open. Let's talk about it and see if we can come to an understanding of the before and after the affair. My first talking point is cheating doesn't mean your partner is a bad person. Now, this is kind of a gray area, I know, but I'll explain that in a moment. Cheating doesn't mean your partner is a bad person, but it does mean they're doing bad behavior. Now, if you don't think cheating is bad behavior, then this segment isn't for you. But everyone I've ever met believes that if their partner cheats on them, it's unacceptable. It's bad. Even people who have cheated on their partners believe that if their partner cheated on them, it would be unacceptable and bad behavior. So I want you to understand that cheating derives from some sort of temptation, and temptation is the body's way of reacting and responding to that activation that I was talking about. And it doesn't mean necessarily that the person doing it is a bad person. It's just the behavior that they're responding to and either choosing not to stop or what they might tell you unable to stop. I don't believe that's true. I think everyone has a conscious choice to do so unless they have brain damage. But I believe that everyone has the conscious choice to withhold from temptation or give in to temptation. But I do want to just start off by saying cheating doesn't make a person bad, but the behavior is bad. And I'm not saying that you, because they're not a bad person, that you must stay with them and all that, but I'll explain more about this in a little bit. All right, another basic about cheating is that cheating is a huge sign of miscommunication in a relationship. Even if that communication is, hey, I want more love and connection, or hey, I want more sex, or hey, I'm not getting some need met, or this girl or guy I know is coming on to me and I'm having confused feelings, or I'm not fulfilled in this relationship and I need more. All of these things could lead to a big and probably difficult conversation, but if you don't bring them up and you instead move into that space of giving into temptation and betraying your partner, things will be much worse down the line. So it's good to understand that cheating is a sign of not communicating openly and honestly with your partner. Because if you were able to communicate whatever is going on in your life, then it's quite possible that the cheating could be avoided. Not always. And a lot of people aren't willing to have these types of hard conversations. But I think it's one of the keys to avoiding having betrayal show up in your relationship is by having open communication. That's why I spoke earlier about talking about infidelity in your relationship. Hey, have you ever been cheated on? Have you ever cheated on anyone? And find out what they say about it. Now, if they say something like, oh yeah, I cheated on her, but she was just always ignoring me and she was this and she was that, and all of their focus and energy goes onto the other person, instead of them going, you know, I did that. It was the wrong thing to do. I regret it. I shouldn't have done that. Yes, she ignored me. Yes, she did this. Yes, she denied me sex, but I still did the wrong thing. There's a different energy. There's a different way that someone can talk about it. They can either say, oh yeah, but she was awful and she was this and she was that, or he. He was awful. He was this. He was that. So I didn't have a problem cheating. That's kind of a scary comment to make. If you hear your partner or someone saying that, I had no problem cheating because they did this, then I would have a problem with that. If my girlfriend said that to me, I would have a problem with that because I would have said, well, why didn't you just break up with them instead of committing the ultimate betrayal? And using this example, she might say, well, you know, he cheated on me too. And then I would have said, like, yeah, but at that point, why didn't you break up with him and go, I don't want any part of this? Instead of going out and becoming vengeful yourself. Now, I will say that could be another gray area. Like, they cheated on me, so I cheated on them, because, you know, I don't recommend that. I would just say, hey, if that happened and you don't like it, then get out of the relationship or work on the relationship. But when you take that kind of step, which is an eye for an eye, again, this is a gray area. I certainly wouldn't encourage it. But if you did it, I wouldn't be like, you're just as bad as they are, because I'm sure the way you feel inside if you did something like that would be like, I didn't know what else to do. This seemed like the best way to get back at them, to show them how I feel. And my non-professional, non-coaching self thinks that that could work. I mean, if you did it to them too, that would work. How does that feel? So personally, you know, that's something I might even consider, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't even go there. But, you know, my thought process would go there. Well, I'm just going to cheat on her too then, since she'll see how I feel. Then I come to my senses and go, you know what? I don't want to be in this relationship. Or I might say, I want to work this out. I want to find out what's going on in this relationship, see if it's worth saving. So like I said, for me, it's a little bit of a gray area when the other person cheats and now you cheat to get back at them or whatever. But all in all, this second talking point about cheating being a huge sign of miscommunication is important to understand. Because if you have these unspoken things that you never talk about in your relationship, you know, you got to be careful about that, because the unspoken topics are the ones that become the problems in some way, shape, or form later. Unless you have no attachment to them, which is fine. But if you have an emotional connection, or you feel triggered every time that subject comes up, so you never talk about it, then it can build up in the background and become a problem later, which is why I think it's very important to have an open line of communication, even about the hard stuff. All right, another basic about cheating is that it isn't always and only about sex. It can be about so many other things. Some people, including myself, believe that betrayal starts when you take what you'd share with your partner to someone else and share it with them instead, or in addition to. For a lot of people, cheating is getting your relationship wants and needs met by someone else. A relationship, again, in my opinion, should be when you are with someone that you can share the most intimate details about yourself, and you can share everything about you, even your body. But if you're sharing those same intimate details with someone else that actually could be a potential partner in some way, then your partner may see that as cheating. And it may be, because if the person that your partner is talking to would be someone your partner would date if they were single, it raises a flag. You know, these are the things that if you share your intimate details with me and you also share them with another person that if you were single, you would date, that becomes a threat to me. So when there's a threat, I feel like there is a risk being in the relationship. I feel that there's a risk that there could be infidelity. So these thoughts start to permeate my mind. And I know a bunch of people listening right now know exactly what I mean. You're talking to her. You're talking to him. You're telling her or him all these intimate details, the same details that you told me. I think a great question to pose in your own mind is, if my partner was single, would they date that person? That's a tricky one, because it's quite possible they would date them anyway, even if they weren't sharing intimate details. Or when you're single, you don't necessarily think the same way as when you're with someone else. So it might be kind of an unfair question. Like, they might say, well, yeah, I might consider it, but I'm with you and I'm not even considering that right now. That could be an honest answer. But with the combination of sharing all the intimate details, sharing your time and energy and even your body with your partner, if any of that is shared with someone else, then it can be considered betrayal to the partner. So it's just good to keep in mind, because if you have an intimate relationship with someone else that is in your line of sight as a potential partner, if you were single, and you're sharing all this intimate stuff with them, your partner might think that something else might be going on. And I've had people write to me and say, yeah, but they've been my best friend since high school. And I think that's okay. I think you can have people that could be a potential partner as great friends, as best friends. But if they are getting all the same information that you share with your partner, if they are feeling the emotional connection that you share with your partner, if there's intimacy beyond a friendship and your partner feels like there's a threat, then you just have to consider the ramifications of the closeness of that friendship. Doesn't mean you have to get rid of it, but you have to really consider what your priority is in life. If your priority is to share everything with your best friend and your partner doesn't like it because if you're single, there's a potential relationship connection there, then you might have to make a choice. I'm not saying you just ditch the friend or ditch the partner, but you might have to look at your priorities and go, you know, what's most important to me? Do I want my best friend forever and I'm going to make sure that I'm always telling them all the secrets about everything that happens to me and us? Or do I want to put all my time and energy and focus on my relationship because that's the person that I want to spend the most time with and have the most intimate connection with? And some people out there won't want an and both solution. Some people won't want their partner to have this friendship that they share everything with this person, along with sharing the same things in the relationship, because it makes the relationship feel not special. And when the relationship doesn't feel special, doesn't feel safe and secure, and behind this lockbox of emotional security, physical security, then the box is unlocked and you feel exposed as the partner or someone who's doing this. So this is where that comes from. If you or your partner are in any type of intimate friendship, that's why it can appear as a threat to the partner. And relationships are built on the idea that you should feel safe and secure and protected in the boundaries of that relationship. Anyway, one of the next basics of cheating is that cheating can be absolutely devastating to the other person. I once called it emotional murder, and I still call it emotional murder. It can be that awful to the person being betrayed. When you betray your partner, it's like ripping their heart out and throwing it on the ground. It lets them know that you don't care about their thoughts and feelings, that you can do anything you want to do without caring what they think. And I've heard from people who have cheated that say, but I love my partner. I don't know why I cheated. I love them. I never even thought about cheating. It just happened. And, you know, I have a definition of love that if you really love someone, then you support their happiness. That's how I define love. Again, these are all my opinions, but if you love someone, that means you support their happiness. When you support someone's happiness and you know that cheating is devastating to them, then I can't honestly say that you love them, at least in the way that I define love. Now, the people that have reached out to me and say, I love my husband, I love my wife, and I still cheated. I don't know what came over me. I still did it. The only way I can reconcile that is that that person may define love in a way that's more about themselves than the other person. If you define love as, I love the way I feel when I'm with you, I call that being in love, then you don't love the person in a way that supports them. You are only in love with that person in a way that supports you. Again, that's my definition of love. I believe if you truly love someone, you want them to be happy. You support their path to happiness. And when you define love that way, it makes you question your own behavior in a way that supports them. In other words, loving someone means questioning yourself before doing anything that might be seen as a betrayal. If your actions and your behavior can be seen in their eyes as betraying their happiness, betraying their trust, betraying their sense of security with you, I don't see it as love. I hate to say that, but this is how I perceive it. So I like to say, when you love someone, ask yourself the question before doing anything that you might think is a little questionable. Ask yourself the question, would this behavior make my partner unhappy? It's a great question. You're about to do something or you're considering doing something and you have these, let's just say that you're thinking about cheating on your partner and your system's activated and you're about to give in to temptation. Would this behavior make your partner unhappy? I think I told this story in the air once, but I was with someone in a hotel room many, many years ago when I was married, and it wasn't my wife, but I was visiting this person, and while I was in the hotel room, I felt my system activate, and I go, wait a minute, something's going on here. I can't be in this situation. I'm married. I can't feel like this. I just felt wrong at the same time feeling like, whoa, there's a big temptation here. There's a big attraction here. What do I do? What should I do? And the question came to my mind, the thought process I'm having right now, the feelings I'm having right now, I'm feeling all this temptation. Is this right? You know, that was the first question. Is this right? Is this even a path I want to start on? Would this make my partner unhappy being in this situation, being in this proximity with my system activated like that? And all these big red flags came up. No, 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 you need to leave. And quite literally, I left. I said, I gotta go. And she's like, where are you going? And I'm like, I can't be here. And we were just talking. It was completely innocent. But however, I still felt activated. And I told her, I have to go. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I left. And she goes, where are you going? And from that point on, I never spoke to her again. I hope she's not listening because she's never heard this story. Not my ex-wife, but the girl that was in that room. I just got activated, and I don't know where it came from, but it suddenly was there. And I felt like I can't risk my marriage. I can't risk my own sense of integrity. So I took off. I left the hotel room, and I never looked back. I never called this person again. I never kept in touch with her. I didn't want anything to do with it because I realized that I could not really control this activation process in me. So I avoided it. And I'm grateful that I avoided it because I never wanted to go down that path. Had I gone down that path and gave into my temptation, well, after the next break, you'll hear all kinds of things about what happens when someone does that. But so I did. I took off, never talked to her again. And I don't think I was ever activated by anyone else from that point on, because I became very aware of what was happening inside me and my body and my thoughts. And I decided to refocus my energy on my marriage. I needed to refocus. I mean, yes, there were things going on in my marriage that made it tough. You know, my marriage ended up falling apart anyway. And I could point at those things and say, you know, those are the reasons I was unconsciously seeking intimacy with someone else. But quite honestly, this is the way it is for all of us. Unless you have brain damage, we have control over our own behavior, no matter how tempting something is. We have control. We can choose to say yes. We can choose to say no, even though it feels overwhelming and overpowering and our body is working the way it's supposed to work and we want to give in. We can still say no. Just ask yourself the question, would this behavior make my partner unhappy? And that will ground you. That will bring you back to reality, where you can go and, no, this is a bad thing. I need to start focusing my energy somewhere else. So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you because there was a temptation. You know, like I said, in my 20s, I was also tempted. But when I was married in my 30s, I felt that too. I think when you love someone and you ask yourself that question, you end up doing things that reinforce that love for that person so that you can stay in alignment with the values of a healthy relationship. That's what I always encourage, you know, stay in alignment with the values of a healthy relationship so that you can always work toward making it better instead of always trying to find a way to get your needs met somewhere else. However, and this is a big however, if you absolutely must do something that you know won't make your partner happy, a course of action that respects that person the most will be either to A, express what you want to do and have a discussion about it. A lot of people won't go there. Or B, separate. So A or B, if you're having these temptations and you want to do something about it, you want to give in to that temptation, have a discussion with your partner. I know it's like, no one would ever do that. Why would I do that? Why would I have a discussion with my partner that I want to cheat on them? I think it needs to be brought up. Because if you're really going to cheat on them, it's going to go a lot worse. It really is. It'll be fine in the moment, but later on, it's a lot worse. Believe me, if you don't bring it up first, it'll be a lot worse later. So I'm not saying that you have to say, hey, hon, I think I want to cheat on you. I think it has to be a discussion of, hey, hon, I'm not getting my needs met in the relationship. I think we need to talk about it. I think it's a great conversation to have, even though it might be the hardest conversation to have, or one of the hardest. And the second option, B, separate. If you really can't help giving into temptation, don't betray, separate. And then, you know, you have some freedoms there. I'm not going to say that you should do this or it's the right thing to do, but it's a lot better than being committed to someone and choosing to be with someone else than to say, you know what, I want to separate. I want to do our own thing for a while and then choosing to be with someone else. I'm not encouraging or discouraging either path here. I'm just saying try to avoid the betrayal route when you can, because it's a lot worse when it becomes a betrayal. We're going to talk about that in the next segment, but it is vital that you don't go down that route. And for those who have experienced it, they're like, yes, exactly, because it's a lot worse. It hurts definitely on one side, but sometimes on both. A lot of guilt, a lot of pain, a lot of anger, all because someone submitted to temptation. Which leads to option C, which I didn't mention. Option C is to stay in the relationship and don't tell your partner what you're going to do, which is basically cheating on them. Cheaters are always caught. Always. If not today, if not tomorrow, next year, in 5 years, whenever, it's going to happen. And it's not going to end well. The cheater always gets caught. Now, I don't mean red-handed. And I don't mean that someone has irrefutable proof about it. I mean, even in the slightest, tiniest way that you may never consider. When someone cheats, their behavior changes, and if not overtly, covertly, it could be very subconscious, but their behavior does change. The husband that starts treating his spouse better, the wife that starts working out more and listening to rock instead of easy listening, the boyfriend caught in lies, the girlfriend explaining texts or emails, so on and so on. Most cheaters think they can cover their tracks, but it just doesn't work because the behavior changes become so prevalent. And even if there's not a behavior change, consider the cheater's new hookup, for lack of a better term, starting to show up in different ways. Sometimes their hookup will want more of a cheater's time and they'll become more prominent in the relationship. And if they're ever in the same room and you're there too and you don't know there's cheating going on, you're going to notice the glances. It's impossible for a cheater to hide these kind of things. If a cheater's cheating isn't found out, their change in behavior is enough to signal something. And the cheater's partner will sense it, and they will probably follow up on it. My girlfriend was married to a cheater, and when she suspected it, she found no overt evidence of his cheating, but she suspected it. She's like, something's going on, and I don't know, and she was doing something that I highly recommend against, which was justifying the red flags. Never justify the red flags. The red flags are there to tell you to investigate more. I might get some flack for that, but if you have a suspicion, investigate. Find out what's going on. Don't justify the red flags. So that's what she did. She had this little voice in her head saying, you know, check his phone bill, check his phone bill. So she decided to open up and she discovered something that I won't even share with you, but let's just say it was quite obvious that the person he claims to never talk to, he has talked to quite a bit. And so from that point on, she knew exactly what was going on. She knew he was lying and that her intuition was correct, that those red flags were real because she investigated. Sometimes you have to investigate. Investigation leads to closure. Investigation helps you either prove that they're cheating or make you feel better because they're not. Either way, it's closure. So if you have the suspicion that they're lying or betraying, then sometimes you do have to do that investigation just to get that closure. And finally, let me get to my last point before the next segment where I talk about what to expect after the affair. This is last but not least of the basics of cheating. The cheating person will more than likely have cheated more than once and maybe with more than one person when they are caught, as opposed to fessing up before they are caught. This isn't a hard and fast rule, but it should be a consideration. If the cheater has been caught, then the likelihood that it happened more than once is high. The possibility that it happened with more than one person is also high. But it doesn't always mean that. It's just a greater possibility. Now, on the other hand, a cheater who cheats once, or maybe even a few times with the same person, but feels guilty about it and has to confess it to their partner, in that particular situation, your relationship has a greater chance of survival. Because this might actually mean that the cheater has a conscience, has empathy, has compassion, and actually regrets that they would do something to hurt you. This is a big separation in the one who gets caught, who's trying to get away with it, and the one who fesses up. You know, fessing up, that's one of those hard conversations to have. If you have been the cheater or are the cheater and you fess up, there's a greater chance that your relationship's going to survive it. If instead you're caught and days, weeks, months, or even years have gone by, that kind of deception, that kind of betrayal can last the rest of their life. I mean, they may never trust you again. But for a person who's cheating to come to terms and go, you know what, I've got to fess up. I've got to say this because he or she deserves to know the truth. That's huge because you know it's going to be a punishment for you if you're the cheater. You know it's going to be punishment once you divulge this. But that's taking responsibility. That's saying, I am ready to take my punishment because you deserve to know the truth. And they may break up with you. They may divorce you. They may punch you in the face. I don't know. They may be so angry that you will not be able to do anything about it. And if that's the case, you have to accept their place. You have to accept where they are. And if you want to keep the relationship, you just hope things work out. But fessing up is telling your partner that I want to respect you. I want to love you. I screwed up and I need to say this to you, even though I realize that this could be the end of our relationship. Those kind of hard conversations are the most powerful conversations you can have in life because it shows that you respect the other person enough to tell them the truth, even if it's devastating. And I believe that your chances of rebuilding the relationship, if you want to keep the relationship, are much greater when the cheater fesses up instead of getting caught, which creates all kinds of havoc, all kinds of heartbreak and trust issues. The fessing up part is the first step back into a trusting process, even though that could be miles away for them to trust you again. It could be miles and miles, thousands of miles away, metaphorically speaking. So there are just a few of the basics of cheating that I wanted to get out of the way before we talk about what to expect after the affair. We'll be right back. Well, it's been about 2 months since we got our Casper mattress, and I want to give you my assessment so far. My assessment is I don't have to think about it. I don't have to think about it being saggy or being too hard or being too soft. These issues just don't come to mind because these issues just don't exist in our Casper mattress. Now, let me give you some backstory here. When I first moved in with my girlfriend, she would rave about the mattress she had. She spent so much money on it and she loved it. That was until I started sleeping on it. She had slept alone for so long that when I started sleeping over, we both noticed that we ended up rolling toward each other, occupying the same space at the same time, which sounds more like quantum physics than mattress physics. But that's what happened. She loved her old mattress when she lived alone. When I showed up and I started complaining about her mattress, after a few months, she finally came to an admittance that perhaps the mattress she bought wasn't so great after all. And then we ended up talking about it for another 2 years. That's 2 years of waking up with an aching back and even a little frustration toward each other because we kept rolling into the deep groove that my heavier body created. So when I heard about Casper, a mattress that combines multiple supportive memory foams that provides a quality sleep surface with just the right amounts of sink and bounce, I told her I wanted us to get one. still committed to her old mattress, she wasn't ready to give it up just yet. So the Casper wasn't going to happen until we tried everything. And we did. We tried making her old mattress work. We changed the box springs. We continually rotated it, looking for the most comfortable layout. We even called the mattress company, only to find out they went out of business. So at that point, she knew there was nothing more we could do. And just a couple months ago, she finally agreed that it was time to get a new mattress. I'm happy to say, after 2 months, this Casper has the same amount of comfort and firmness, along with just enough give to support the areas of our body that allow us to sleep easily, restfully, and most importantly, without us having to even think about how to lay on a mattress. I know that sounds weird, but I always had to think about, how can I lay on our old mattress so that it doesn't hurt in the morning? Seriously, our old mattress, we had to think about it before we were going to bed so that we didn't sink into each other at night. It was like mattress calculus, trying to calculate the best position to lay in. But now it's easy. We don't have to think about anything. It's one of the first mattresses where when we lay down, we don't have to say a word. It just feels good and it's just easy to relax. And Casper is affordable because they cut out the middleman and they sell directly to you. And they offer a no-hassle return if you're not completely satisfied. And that's the most generous part of their delivery. If you aren't satisfied for any reason within 100 nights, they'll pick it up for free in the US and Canada. So I want you to take advantage of their Sleep On It trial and feel secure that if their mattress isn't for you, they'll come and get it and you'll get your money back. Delivered in a how do they do that sized box and with over 20,000 reviews with an average of 4.8 stars, Casper is becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And I want you to experience why that is. Visit casper.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN during checkout to get $50 towards select mattresses. I want you to have the experience that my girlfriend and I have every restful night on your own Casper mattress. casper.com/brain. Use the promo code BRAIN to get your $50 off select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. All right, welcome back. Part two of our infidelity episode. And this part, we're going to talk about what to expect after the affair. And this is if you choose to stay in the relationship. If you choose to leave the relationship, that's a different set of variables sometimes. But and there's still healing involved, absolutely. But this is if someone has had an affair in your relationship and you decide to work it out. Again, these are my opinions. It may not necessarily lead to reconciliation or closure, but I hope these points help. My first point is, in order to get closure, I believe in full disclosure, so that nothing is left as a mystery and everything is on the table. In other words, once the cheating is known, the cheater must fess up everything. I'm not saying you have to fess up every little detail, every little tiny visual image that you could burn into your partner's mind. And it won't be easy for the partner who has to learn who it was with and where and when it happened. But when you put it all out on the table, it's tangible and you can work with it. It also shows that the cheater is now, from this day forward, going to be fully transparent about their activities, leaving nothing to the imagination. It shows that they're not trying to deceive or omit information. They just want to be crystal clear and honest about everything. So this is for the cheater that regrets what they did and they want to stay in the relationship and they will never do it again and they actually feel bad about what they did to their partner. Put it all on the table. This is who I did it with. This is where we met up. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you talk about in the conversation. You don't just blurt it all out. This is what I did. This is who I was with. This is where I was. The cheater lets their partner ask those questions and how much they want to know, you disclose. Now, it comes to the dirty little details, and they want to know that too. If that's what their questions are, I believe it's okay to be that descriptive. However, I do recommend something like, you know, I don't want to share that with you because it's going to be painful for you to hear. So that gives the partner the option to choose to hear it or not. Now, I know I keep reiterating this, but these are my opinions. I say that because this could lead to aggression. This could lead to violence. I need you to be careful in this area. If you have a partner that finds out something like this and you start giving all these little dirty details, you're going to create a reaction in them. So it's very important that you understand what could happen. And yes, you may need some sort of mediator. You may need a therapist. You may need someone to help you through this and have those details come out in a safer place. However, like I said, I do believe that when you get it all out on the table and you have full disclosure, at least the victim of the cheating, the partner of the cheater, has all the details that they can do something with. They may not be able to do anything with it. But the reason I like full disclosure is that when you leave stuff out, it leaves things to the imagination. And that imagination, especially after something like this, always goes to the worst case scenario and always fills in the blanks with multiple bad things. They may obsess about it. They may hate it. But at least they have the information and they can process it. They can talk to you about it. They can yell at you about it. I mean, if you're the cheater, they can do whatever they need to do with it, but at least they have the information. All right, let's go to the second point of what to expect after the affair if you choose to stay in a relationship. The cheater must be willing to do almost anything their partner asks of them for at least 6 months. If that means their partner wants to check their phone, if they want to log into their email, if they want to see every text and listen to every voicemail, or even show up unexpectedly at the cheater's work, then a remorseful cheater who wants to repair the damage in the relationship will comply, no questions asked. In other words, a remorseful cheater will live in a glass house where their partner can see everything going on in their life. This is their retribution. This is their form of rectification for committing emotional murder. The cheater must willingly and voluntarily live under the scrutinous eye of their partner until the partner can learn to gain trust in them again. I've heard from people who their partner cheated, and the partner, after like a month or so of being under their scrutinous eye, was like, all right, lay off me. You've seen enough. You've seen all my texts. You've seen all my emails. You interrupt me at work. That's enough. I mean, when a partner does that, they're either not understanding the amount of pain and anguish that their partner is going through, and they most likely don't understand that their partner needs to rebuild trust, and it could take a very long time. There's that part of it, but they also don't seem to have enough empathy for their partner to think that a month is long enough to be forgiven and move on. I just don't think a month is long enough. I think 6 months is a very short window of time when it comes to a huge betrayal, especially if you've been together for years, and especially if the betrayal has gone on for months or years. These things don't just take a short period of time and then it's over. The cheater has to realize, I know I call the person the cheater, that's just for lack of a better term. It could be a former cheater. It could be someone who did it on purpose, someone who made a mistake. I'm just using the term cheater, and I don't mean any disrespect to those out there that have to go through this or have gone through this in some way, shape, or form, but I'm just using the word cheater as an all-purpose word here. So the cheater has to realize the damage they caused and to put themselves in their partner's shoes, that if they were betrayed, how long would it take them to get over it? It's very important that the cheater understands that their partner could be angry, untrusting, anxious, a lot of other negative emotions for months and maybe up to a year or more. And we're going to talk about what happens when it goes more, but I recommend a minimum of 6 months of living in that glass house. So if you are the cheater, if your partner's the cheater, they need to live in this glass house. They need to be ready to be interrupted at any time of the day. Where are you? What are you doing? Because the victim of the cheating needs to reinforce in themselves that you are now showing up with integrity. You are now telling the truth, and they need to build references that every time they check on you, you are being legit. You are being honest. You are being monogamous. You are just showing up in every way your partner wants you to show up. You will be under that watchful eye, and I think it's okay. That's just where I stand. My third point is the cheater must be willing to accept their partner's anger and upset about the cheating again for at least 6 months. The cheater has to remember that their partner has had the ultimate betrayal happen to them. their trust and security has been thrown out the window by the very person they were supposed to have the most trust and feeling of security with. So if you're the cheater, when you're getting yelled at and told how much damage you've caused, I believe you should just sit there quietly and take it. And you need to let it happen without question for at least 6 months. If you don't do it for at least 6 months, the relationship can bypass the healing process and make it difficult to regain any sense of happiness. I believe it's okay for the cheater to be made to feel guilty for a while. After all, the cheater murdered their partner's heart, and now the cheater has to endure some pain because of that. It sounds harsh. It doesn't sound like that unconditional loving place that we should all come from, I say sarcastically, but unless you've ever been cheated on, you may not realize just how much damage you caused. Again, like I said earlier, the cheater is not a bad person because they cheated, but they did do bad behavior. They may be a bad person because of other things they do in their life, but I'm only talking about cheating. So if you've cheated or your partner's cheated, I'm not saying you're bad or unworthy. You did the deed for sure, but I'm helping both cheaters and victims of cheating understand the basics and the aftermath. All right, my third point after the affair is that the residual could last years. If you are unable to fully get over and heal from the cheating, and the cheater doesn't display all the signs of remorse and wanting to be completely transparent and willing to take their punishment, the healing may not have taken place. That means the anger and the upset will likely stay in the relationship to be re-triggered time and time again. These triggers are very much indicators that trust has not been reestablished and the victim does not feel safe enough to let their guard down. Imagine living life not being able to let your guard down. There are listeners of this show that are living that very life now. When you can't let your guard down, then you can't access your full breadth of emotions that you have, the full access to happiness, the full access to productive anger where you get things done. Sometimes the people who let their guard down will close up. If I'm too happy, then I'm vulnerable and somebody could smash that happiness or throw it back in my face. And now I'm miserable again. So they keep their guard up. This can happen in a relationship. If there's been cheating without the healing, the guard never comes down and you never have a fully fulfilling relationship. This means that you could be re-triggered over and over again, which is an indicator that trust hasn't been reestablished and the victim doesn't feel safe enough to be as intimate as they want to be. So it's important to understand if you don't go through the necessary steps of healing, which involves the minimum of 6 months of the cheater, you know, living in that glass house and sitting there accepting of the anger and any type of punishment that their partner wants to throw at them. I mean, within reason, I'm not going to say that it needs to be hit over the head with a club or anything like that. There are limits to this, but you know, you need to go through this processing and releasing and healing. Otherwise, if you bypass all that, like I said earlier, if the cheater is like after a month, oh, you know, you need to get over it already, then you will deal with the residual for probably years up until the rest of the relationship. All right, the fourth understanding that you need to have after the affair is that the cheater will probably need to learn how to make their partner a priority above almost everything else. This could mean quitting their job because they work with the person they hooked up with, or choosing different friends because one of their friends is the person they hooked up with, or something else. This doesn't mean I'm endorsing this or advising this, but big steps in the direction toward the relationship and away from what influenced the cheater in the first place goes a long way in the partner of the cheater's heart. Now, these major steps, I realize, might not be possible. But keep in mind, if the cheater wants the relationship to work out, I mean, they really want it, they are so remorseful, and they want to repair the damage, they are willing to make sacrifices in other areas of life to prove that they want this above all else. Again, this may not be the path that the cheater needs to take, but these kinds of sacrifices, these kind of compromises in their life shows a level of commitment to the relationship where the cheater is really willing to do anything. I see that as a big plus in the healing and regaining trust department. If the cheater is willing to make sacrifices to show their partner just how much they're committed to the relationship, that can go a long way toward healing. And I'm going to reiterate this. I'm not saying I advise this or endorse this. I'm saying that when it does happen, when the cheater makes a huge sacrifice and says, I will never talk to that person again. I've quit that department. I don't hang out with those friends anymore. That can be a sign of accelerated healing for both of you. Yes, when the cheater feels bad, feels guilty, there's healing they need to do too. We're going to talk about that momentarily. But those sacrifices, those compromises in their life can show the level of commitment, the level of remorse, the level of even empathy they feel that puts you both in a better position to rebuild the relationship stronger than ever. Now, the last thing to expect after the affair, if you choose to stay in the relationship, is that the cheater, if they are doing almost all of these steps, must be allowed to let go of the guilt and release themselves from any emotional prison they or their partner set them up in. Yes, the cheater gets reprieve after the months of punishment that have been administered. Like I said, I usually set a minimum of 6 months, but it can sometimes take up to a year. And hopefully in that year, there is more and more leniency from the cheater's partner month after each month, because the cheater should now be being completely open and honest about what's going on in their life and willing to do whatever their partner wants to show that they are all in. You know, accepting their partner's upset and anger is a big one. Taking it, knowing that this is what happens and what needs to happen to start the healing process. And the cheater needs to understand that triggers can happen even years later, but the cheater needs to be okay with that. Now, that doesn't mean you should face the same triggers over and over and over again for years. If you're having the same issue come up over and over again, you need to get through it. You need to talk about it. You need to work through it. Because the same trigger that comes up, you know, you cheated on me 3 years ago and I'm still upset about it. If that's happening, like I said, the healing hasn't taken place. The cheater either hasn't gone through all these steps or their partner hasn't learned to get beyond these steps. And there could be some sort of counseling needed for the both of them. But, you know, more often than not, if all of these steps or points are taken or understood, then healing can take place. But there will be triggers. I mean, even years later, even through the healing, like if you haven't gone to the beach in years, and then one day you're at the beach, the cheater's partner could be triggered because they're looking at a body in a swimsuit. And the partner's like, oh, that reminds me of when you did this, and I'm really upset. I have feelings to process now. And the cheater, or, you know, former cheater, has to go, okay, you know, let me hear it. What's going on in you? And they are just open to it. But that shouldn't mean that every time you go to the beach, you have to face that. You should be able to get through these things and talk about these things as long as it's open communication and the former cheater is willing to allow that stuff to come up and give their partner a safe place to express it, because it's going to come out. And if the cheater is making their partner a priority, then they're meeting the criteria to facilitate healing in the best way possible. Now I'm going to close this segment, and when we come back, I'm going to say some thank yous, and I'm going to give you my final thoughts on all of this just to wrap things up. Thanks for joining me today. Be right back, and we'll close the show with my final words after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Casper for giving me the opportunity to sleep peacefully and restfully every night. Visit casper.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN to get $50 towards select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. I also want to thank members of the Patron Program. The TOB Patron Program is a great way to say thank you for this show. Not only that, patrons get the bonus episodes, workbooks, and even e-coaching if you choose that option, so I like to give back even more whenever I can. So thank you again to patron members. You're an important component of this show. If you'd like to become a supporting member of the show, visit patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And I want to tell you about the MEAN workbook. This is the evaluation and assessment guide for difficult relationships. I mean, that's what we talked about today, at least a difficulty in the relationship. I talk with so many people that don't quite know what emotional abuse is, or they think that verbal abuse is only when someone yells at them or calls them bad names, but I do run into a lot of people that know what manipulation is. However, these same people may not know about the subtle manipulation going on in their relationship right under their nose. My take on all this emotional or verbal abuse and manipulation is that you know you're experiencing it if, before you got into the relationship, you were fine. But after getting into the relationship, you started feeling bad about yourself. You started questioning your decisions and feeling less confident in yourself and blaming yourself for everything that goes wrong. If that's you, I might go as far as betting money that there is some sort of manipulation or emotional or verbal abuse going on in your relationship. If you can't pinpoint what's happening in your relationship, the Mean Workbook is designed to do just that. After you take the 200-point assessment and figure out exactly what's happening in your relationship, you'll have some clear steps laid out on what you need to do next. And it's not always about leaving the relationship, because sometimes, the manipulative partner doesn't even know they're doing it. So if you want to find out if you're in this type of relationship and what you can do to start healing today, or if you just need justification of your next step, go to loveandabuse.com and get the Mean Workbook today. I'm also going to mention something my friend Dean told me to tell you. He's a friend of mine that encouraged me to start this show a long time ago and to really embrace coaching. So when he tells me something, I have to listen to him. He said, "How come you don't ask people on your show to sign up for your newsletter?" I said, "Well, they can if they want." He said, "Do your listeners even know you have a newsletter?" I thought, maybe. So Dean, this is for you. If you like what you hear on this show and you want to get a newsletter 2 to 4 times a month where I share a story and a lesson about emotional intelligence or expand upon a topic you hear on the show, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com. You'll see a couple places there where you can sign up. So sign up. I get a lot of good feedback on the newsletter, so check it out. Thanks, Dean. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. To close the show, I want to tell you that healing from cheating is possible. And the cheater, in my opinion, does need to suffer for some time when they've betrayed their partner. But within about a year, it's my belief that the cheater is allowed to forgive themselves and move into a new space of no guilt and less or no pain. Because after 6 months to about a year, depending on how long it takes you if you ever run into this situation, the former cheater needs to be released from their suffering so that you can both now rebuild the relationship from a healthy space. If the cheater continues to carry guilt and continues to face the wrath of their partner's hurt and anger after a year or so, the relationship can't and won't rebuild and get off the ground again. Now, this is for the remorseful cheater that absolutely will never do it again and wants to rebuild the relationship. It's for both of you. If you want to rebuild the relationship, then I believe after the cheater suffers, after you suffer, that the suffering needs to stop on both sides. And I believe that the cheater, once all of the criteria that I talked about earlier is followed, should forgive themselves. They should accept that they made the mistake, forgive themselves, and move forward, closing the past behind them, but never forgetting what happened as a reminder of what could happen again if they ever go down that road. The cheater must let go of the negative emotions, and the cheater's partner must let them. And if the partner can't get past it, the partner may want to consider leaving the relationship. This doesn't mean I side with the cheater or I'm letting them off. It means that the cheater who is remorseful, the cheater who feels awful, who knows they made a mistake or even intentionally did it, but then realizes what they're losing and also comes to a place that they will never, ever betray their partner again, that there's hope that they can get into a new space and that they should get out of that suffering themselves. I mean, the cheater who holds guilt and feels remorseful needs to let go of the guilt at one point, needs to forgive themselves as well. I've met couples where one cheated and the other was still angry and hurt when it happened many years ago. And I get it. That emotional murder has an impact, but it doesn't have to be lifelong. The cheater should be able to get into a space of, I messed up, I apologized, and I'm ready to move on. I mean, that takes a while because there has to be a process, that retribution process, and always leaving the door open for their partner's anger and upset. But there does need to be that time if the relationship is to continue. Again, this is all predicated on the idea that the relationship will continue. If you're not going to continue this relationship, then you go your separate ways and each of you have to deal with, you know, some processing and healing yourself. but the cheater does need to get into a space of, I messed up, I apologize, and I'm ready to move on. But if the cheater's partner wants them to continue apologizing and continue feeling bad for what they did years after the cheating, the relationship is never going to go anywhere. Because now you have two people that both feel bad trying to create a happy relationship. It just doesn't work that way. However, when the cheating person comes into a better space of, I messed up, I'll never do it again, and I'm ready to move on, this can actually be a very good thing. That is when they mean they'll never do it again. If they really mean it, because they know the damage it causes and they really want to love you in a healthy, selfless way, the reconciliation can stem from that, and it could be the start of a strong, long-lasting relationship. And believe me, there's a lot of healing that the victim of cheating needs to do, a lot. I did an episode called Surviving Infidelity, an Overlooked Warning Sign, and Healing in the Aftermath, or Healing After Cheating, I think I called the article. If you go to my website, you can type in Healing After Cheating, and you should find the article right away. But that is the episode I did a while back for the partner of the cheater to get into a space of healing. I mean, it helps both when you want to save the relationship, but there is more emphasis on the partner of the cheater and healing in that episode as well. But everything I talked about today is vital for a relationship rebirth, a relationship for two people to want the relationship to continue, but involves a rebirth, a restarting, so that you can start fresh and hopefully with new lessons, new understandings, and much more open communication. And I'd recommend listening to my episodes on forgiveness and apologizing. Again, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. You can use the search field for forgive, forgiveness, forgiving, apologize. Type any of those in and you'll find some articles on it. I explain a lot more there. But the idea is that when you apologize for something and you really mean it, you only have to say it once and move on. Now, that's apologizing in general. This doesn't work for infidelity. So don't think I'm just going to go there and say, well, they apologize, let's move on. Infidelity is one of the most ultimate betrayals. In year one, after the infidelity is found out, the infidel may have to apologize as needed over and over again, because that's part of the retribution. That is part of the suffering that the cheater may need to endure for a while. But after the first 6, 8, 12 months, it's time for the cheater to stop apologizing and start moving forward with a healthy perspective of the future. You know, a year of punishment and making up for their emotional crime is a good deal of time to come into a new place and be a new person that has a fresh start. I'm not saying all cheaters deserve a good fresh start in the relationship. If there was a cheater in your life and they had multiple people, there's no remorse, there's no guilt, and they want you to get over it, and they don't feel bad for what they did. They may act like they feel bad for what they did, but they probably just feel bad for getting caught. There is that. But if you really sense a true, authentic feeling bad for what they did, and they're willing to open the door to their entire life, live in that glass house for a while, you can see everything they do, then there's a chance that they could be really authentic and that this relationship could start off on a new foot and that something could build from it. So like I said, a year of punishment for the cheater is enough time to make up for their what I would call an emotional crime. And the victim of the cheater will put their partner to the test. And the cheater will have to pass that test, not once, not 10 times, but as many times as their partner wants to administer the test. That test could be the partner getting upset and yelling at them again for the same thing they yelled at them for months ago. That test could be calling them in the middle of the day. That test could be showing up at their job. That test could be, I don't know, planting a low-jack GPS system in their car. I'm not saying that you should. But that's what happens, is that when you're under the scrutinous eye of your partner who's been betrayed, you might have to go through the trials. That's all I'm saying. However, there has to be an end to the testing eventually. It cannot go on indefinitely. Otherwise, it's not a path to reconciliation and healing. It's continuous heartache and pain. When the cheater never lets go of their guilt and the victim never lets go of their anger, there is no future, only pain. And no doubt, cheating can be the end of a relationship. You know, if my girlfriend cheated, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if I could continue the relationship because I feel like our relationship is very open, very honest. We talk about everything. So if I suddenly found out she was cheating, I can't really feel like there's any further to go with our relationship. We can't be any more honest than we are now. So that to me might be the end of the relationship. But that's me personally. You know, I'm willing to make these very hard sacrifices in life because I have very strict standards for how I want to live my life. I never see that happening. I can't see that happening in my relationship. But, you know, there are people out there where, you know, cheating is the thing that will end the relationship, no questions asked. But, you know, until I go through it, I can't really honestly say 100% that it would end the relationship. I don't know. And hopefully I never have to go through it. Hopefully you never have to go through it. Or if you're trying to get over it now, or if you're with someone who does feel guilt and shame, or if you're the one who feels the guilt and shame of cheating, and you know or they know that you or they will never do it again, if there's remorse, if there's commitment to a new way of being, if there's commitment to being open and honest and focusing on the relationship has a chance of working out better than ever. That's if both partners are willing to go through those trials and eventually get past the pain so they can start fresh and build something better and stronger than ever. I want you to have the best relationship possible without pain and with love, trust, respect, and even admiration for each other. Hopefully you've not had to deal with a betrayal, but if you have and you're still in one of those stages and it's been years, it's time to make a new plan for your life. There can be a new beginning together or a new journey apart. Either way, don't let the relationship stew in the pain and anger for too long. Otherwise, too much time will be wasted for the both of you. And finally, let me say this. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are significant. And whatever someone else did does not change those facts. Whatever someone else did that made you upset, that made you feel less loved, that made you feel awful, does not change the fact that you are worthy, significant, and lovable. Because you are. And you deserve to be treated with respect because, damn it, you're listening to this show. That means that you're working on yourself all the time and you're showing up in the world as authentically as you possibly can and you want to break free of any self-imposed limitations or even an emotional prison that you may have locked yourself up in. Regardless of what you've done in your life, today is not yesterday and you can decide from this point on what you're going to believe as truth and how you want to show up from this point on. But I'm just here to tell you, you are worthy, you are significant, you are lovable. Don't let anyone ever change those facts. So keep your mind open so that you can step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always continue taking steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.